This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, Now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. It's Friday. That means we bring together the weekly news panel. Who is we? I'm glad you asked. It's Michelle McQuigg and Megan Gilmore. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Dave.
And hello, Megan.
Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Michelle.
So we've got three topics to hash out. Let's get started. The Olympics are in full swing. Canada is doing fairly well in the medal counts, primarily led by women competing under the maple leaf. That's top notch. There is another conversation that has taken root at the Olympics when it comes to shifting standards for female athletes. Earlier in the week, we discussed the German gymnastics team opting for uniforms that were less revealing. It appears that women in sports are facing less objectification, a trend that is long overdue. Now, this trend was observed by our producer, Paul Daniel. I think I've seen a similar trend in my echo chamber that female athletes are being recognized for their excellence on the field as opposed to their looks. But it's important that I bring this theory to the women on the panel. Michelle, have you noticed that women in sports are being recognized more for their athletic achievements?
It's really interesting, and I'm glad you asked because I feel that this requires some visual feedback that I'm not able to get on my own. I can't say I've heard a huge change in the tone of the CBC coverage, which is primarily what I watch. CBC has historically always been pretty good about celebrating the athletic accomplishments of female athletes, especially because Canadian women have been super dominant in the past several Olympic Games. But what I'm really curious about, and hoping that both of you can shed some light on this for me, is whether they've been changing the way the ladies on the field are presented. I know there's been some interesting discussions taking place about the role that the media has to play in limiting the sexualization of women, not focusing on some of the skimpier uniforms that some people are still mandated to wear. And that's a whole other conversation, of course.
And we'll get there.
Yeah, I know. I'm holding my fire. But I am curious as to whether or not there's been a change in the visual presentation. Because in terms of the audio content, I can't say I've heard a lot apart from the fact that these issues are being discussed in the first place, which is pretty significant. But the TV images, I think, will go a long way to shaping people's perceptions of whether or not this is actually registering.
It's a bit hard to say, Michelle, because in the way that camera angles get shot live, it's always a bit to say whether or not it's objectification or they just happen to catch the angle at the odd time. But I've definitely noticed sort of less the shot of the bending over, tying of the shoe or adjusting the sock. I've seen some of that in regards to watching women's sports or even the men's sports too. I think they've become a little bit better about sort of shooting from that downward angle as opposed to an upward angle, not to get too technical about this. But I would say that the actual like style of the way the events are shot have not changed drastically. Megan, I want to pose the same question to you. Have you observed at all this trend that Paul Daniel picked up on and that I picked up on in my echo chamber?
Sure. I think in general, it's coming across all sports, not Olympic or otherwise, that women are hopefully being seen more as athletes and not objects for sexual gratification. For me, what I actually always find a little probably more interesting isn't necessarily the shots of an Olympic sporting event, because for visual reasons, I might have a harder time picking up on that. What I find more interesting is the coverage that surrounds a female athlete. So they look at like magazine covers and in general, what is the narrative that is presented for female athletes as opposed to male athletes?
Yeah, that's definitely fair. I want to stay with the objectification thing for one more thread here before we start getting into some of the specifics of the uniforms. Because I will admit there have been moments in my life where I was something of a caveman. Now, I went through an awakening because I listen to people when they talk. And I no longer objectify women in sports. That does not deserve a standing applause. It's something that I had to come to. It was a realization. That said, I do still hoot when Cristiano Ronaldo, a male athlete, rolls up his shorts to take free kicks. best quads in sports. I have observed, however, that women in my life do seem pretty comfortable objectifying male athletes. I once had a talk show host that I was on say something about Derek Jeter that would have earned a suspension if the genders were reversed. I've also heard women talk about the butts of baseball players and their required tight pants while at a sports bar. While understanding that the way men have treated women in sports for years has been uber, uber, uber toxic, Megan, have we maybe stumbled into something of a double standard?
Yes, I think that's fair. If I'm going to get frustrated at men for saying these comments about women, I do actually think the same standard should be applied to me. It is, obviously, male sports uniforms are quite different than female sports uniforms. Yeah. Y'all are much more covered when you play than we are. So like for me growing up, actually probably the first sport that I really watched a lot was figure skating.
Mm-hmm.
And that sport it's very obvious in certain, events, the uniforms and the costumes, it's very obvious.
Yeah.
For women. But yeah, I do think women, we need to step up on this one too. But there is also, I think, there is a difference between being able to say that person is good looking, it's visually nice to see, and objectifying them only for their looks and making that the only thing that gives them value.
Yeah, certainly appreciating somebody's aesthetics is not the same thing as sexualizing them. There's a step that goes there. Michelle, I know that the question that I'm asking is cynical, but have we stumbled into a bit of a double standard?
I think Megan's really kind of nailed it in that, yes, I too know many women, friends of mine even, who might be quite inclined to look up some of the male beach volleyball highlights at the end of a given day, and so forth. We'll leave it there. But I think a lot of what's happening there is underpinned by the attitudes that shape the sport. And again, appreciating someone's aesthetic is part of the package. And I think that goes both ways. But the way it hasn't been as overtly used as a marketing tool with male athletes,
yeah,
I don't think.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's where the issue lies for me. And again, it's sort of segue to the uniform issue. Is that the men have a lot more choice and flexibility here and are not expected to present themselves in a certain way. To stick with Megan's figure skating example, that's for the women, that's based on a very, very gender normative, longstanding societal trope of femininity that has to be conformed to. And when you had like artistic merit scores, we saw how the likes of Tanya Harding and people who couldn't necessarily comply with that, despite having the innate technical ability, just couldn't compete with people who presented in a more feminine way. Now, of course, we're seeing a bit of a shift in that conversation. But there's still a long ways to go, as the uniform controversies reveal. And so I still think there is a bit of tension between someone's sexual potential and their athletic prowess. And that is the problem, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, the uniform side of this does lay at the crux of some of these standards, because I did mention the bikini bottoms for beach handball and beach volleyball players earlier in the week. We've seen the gymnastics conversation being had as well. And we've even seen things about like swim caps that are designed for different kinds of hair, more voluminous hair, bigger hair, different kinds of hair being not allowed because they don't conform to standards. And that ultimately leads to the question in regards to rigidity when it comes to uniform standards, understanding there need to be some standards in regards to what athletes look like when they're competing on a team. But do we need, Megan, more flexibility in the way these uniform standards are implemented?
I think we need to look at who the standards were created for.
Yes.
So that the conversation about swim caps, that's a pretty good example. This, as are, to bring this out of sports, think of safety helmets on construction sites, or even I have an assistive device that I put on my head, and I was involved in the testing of that. And one of the things the makers were testing was how it fit on my head, which is a very small petite female head, as opposed to a large man head. So I think there's something to be said for having many people, both men and women, and people of different races involved in your testing, because hair is different Depending on culture, like it's the hair yeah. can be very mm-hmm. different. Like,
yeah, it's
so
genetics.
To me,
it's
I
not,
just feel like that's like test, make your products better, do better product development, do better research and development there, and realize that these standards were created at a very specific time in history where we may not have as many people involved in sports as we do now.
Yeah.
So totally. You need to look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, Megan, we both sort of yad at you there, but did you,
well,
was there
and
more?
And then like, on a smaller point, I personally have never, I would never want to wear bikini bottoms. Like, they just look so uncomfortable. And
amen
awful.
To that.
So
listen, as a proud Quebecer, like, wearing a Speedo is my rite of passage in the summertime.
Look, I good for you, like, but like.
Like, it just baffles me in a world where we're trying to eliminate sexual harassment in sport, see U.S. women's gymnastics team, that in the same breath, we're like, women have to wear bikini bottoms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just does not make any sense to me. Just yeah, wear does. The leg shorts.
Michelle, I know the rigidity question is a leading question, but what do you make of that, of saying, listen, we're still going to have uniforms, but we're going to give you a few more options inside the universe of a uniform?
I think that's critical. And there's so much around uniform design that is really interesting. The swimming cap question that you raised, for those who haven't followed along, has come up this time because a British swimmer on the British team, Alice Deering, first of all, she's their first Black Olympic swimmer on this team, which is a whole other issue. But the cap that she has been wearing to accommodate her thicker, more voluminous hair has been ruled inadmissible and you know, she can't wear it. So that's part of the issue. There's a fascinating book out there called Invisible Women by Caroline Criado Perez, and it actually talks at some length about the ways in which a lot of uniforms, not just athletic, but even ones on work sites and such, have not been designed for female bodies, and simply scaling down the sizing and the measurements doesn't really accommodate the fact that mm-hmm. women have different bodies physically. So there are questions of design that I think really do need to be considered. And then this book that I just referenced only came out a couple of years ago. So it's a pretty recent text, really interesting, highly recommended. But there are these questions that need to be raised on diversity on a whole bunch of issues. And I'd love to hear some of the conversations that go into, let's say, the design of uniforms for para athletes who might have to use wheelchairs and have mm-hmm. constraints on the kinds of sleeves that would come into play, for mm-hmm. instance, for certain mm-hmm. sports. So there, I think there's a whole range of issues to be explored in this realm, and they're becoming increasingly pressing as these conversations come to the fore, at least as far as I'm concerned.
I'm going to ask you guys one more cynical question here, and I'm only asking it because I think it's an interesting point of conversation, not because I believe we should be trying to diminish the accomplishments of female athletes in this moment. But does the celebration of women's sports at the Olympics sometimes ring a bit hollow to you, considering that other than professional women's basketball, women's combat sports, and women's tennis, generally professional women's sports are underfunded, under-resourced, undercovered, under-broadcast? Do these celebrations every Olympic cycle feel somewhat performative, Michelle?
I can't say I've come away with that vibe, but the narrative I am tired of is the surprise that it's the women who are leading Canada's yeah. charge in the medal hunt. We've seen this narrative play out now
over and over again.
Several different Olympics, winter, summer, you name it. Enough with the surprise. I think mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. the Canadian women and women around the world have more than staked their claim to just being covered on an equal playing field. So while I don't have a particular issue with the tone, at least as far as I've witnessed, and it's worth mentioning that because of the time difference, I haven't done as much Olympic watching as I might have in past years.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't have an issue with the tone apart from that sort of sense of surprise and the focus on the perceived rarity value of that. That doesn't quite sit right with me after all this time.
Let me sort of further contextualize this question before I get social media lighting up calling me an incel. Because I deeply support the movement that's occurring right now in women's hockey, the North American Women's Hockey League, the National Women's Hockey League. They're like begging for funding. They're begging for support from the NHL, asking not to play in like amateur arenas, being paid a living wage. So when we go wild in 2014, when Marie Poulin scores the game-winning goal, but then we sort of abandon women's hockey for like four more years, we don't truly reward it. It does say to me that, yeah, we have the celebration in February of 2014, and then in February of 2015, work at a gas station while you're playing professional hockey. You know, like, so that's where I say, like, where the question comes from. We're saying that, yes, we have this moment where we celebrate women's sports when it's amateur time, but when it's time to pay them, it seems like as a sports institution, whether that be sports media, sports journalism, or just sporting leagues, we don't actually pay them the money. You know, women's basketball, for example, the WNBA does reward their athletes, maybe not the same way that the NBA does, but they do make strong wages in that league. And there's a feeder system created by college athletics in the United States. But it seems like when it comes to amateur time, we're super on board with saying, like, empower women's sports. And then when it's time to pay them, we're not there. So, Megan, I've offered a little more context to that question for fear of being accused by people of things that I don't believe. But, Megan, what do you think? Does sometimes it ring a little hollow to you this time of year?
I don't know if it rings hollow because I do get swept up in the emotion of it. But then it's after when you realize, oh, I haven't heard about this person, you know, for like 4 or 5 years. There's always the ongoing question about do we care about amateur sport outside of the Olympics? You know, and some people really do. Some people, including myself, we kind of forget about it, unfortunately. I notice it specifically in Canada. I notice it more how we talk about hockey players. And I am not an expert on hockey, but Hayley Wickenheiser is just one of the greatest Canadian hockey players, period. Not greatest female hockey player, just greatest hockey player. And I remember when people were starting making those arguments about her, being like, you know, like, don't, it would be like, Hayley Wickenheiser is like the female version of Wayne Gretzky. And we're like, no, she's just a great hockey player. And he probably respects her as an athlete too, right? Like, so I think a lot of it comes to, do we discuss female athletes as athletes? Or do we discuss them in this other category called female athlete, which is an asterisk as compared to the men?
Right. This referential concept, yeah. Saying like we have to legitimize it by referencing it to a male athlete.
Yeah. There was a great moment on CBC earlier this week, actually, with Adrian Arsenault discussing things during the opening ceremonies, and Hayley Wickenheiser came up at that point, and someone likened her to sort of Canada's Michael Jordan, I think, in terms of her off court or off ice accomplishments. And Adrian Arsenault just like, actually, maybe he's more like their Hayley Wickenheiser. Like, just can we just not? Like, she just shut it. She had no time for this. And I just wanted to also just register a quick plus one to everything Megan said. And your points too, Dave, about the system and the way that the limelight is fleeting and not necessarily followed up with money and actual meaningful support.
Guys, thank you for taking some time in approaching this topic. And thanks to Paul Daniel, our producer, for suggesting we give it a closer look. And to all the athletes competing this weekend, I mean, I doubt you're listening today, but best of luck this weekend. You're making us proud. You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.